Welcome to Triple Take, the podcast from AL.com, in which we talk to people about the books, music, and films that shape their lives. I'm Carla Jean Whitley.
I'm Edward Bowser.
And I'm John Hammondry.
Ridiculously excited to have Jamie Golden as our guest. Now, you can know Jamie from a lot of different things. She is a Birmingham resident who is a little bit of a ray of sunshine, if you will. She makes amazing cake pops, but most likely you know her as a co-host of The Popcast, a pop culture podcast that is just really, I don't have words for it. Phenomenal? Is that a fair word?
I think phenomenal might be underselling it a bit, but it is a outstanding piece of work.
So we were thrilled to have Jamie in to talk about Persuasion by Jane Austen. This is a really fun one for me because I'm not really a Jane Austen fan. And Mary Poppins was her favorite movie. And then Edward got to talk with her about Patty Griffin's Living with Ghosts, which is one of my favorite albums, so I was jealous.
Yes, and we have a new convert here. So I won't spoil anything, but you'll hear in just a few minutes how apparently I'm a Patty Griffin fan.
I am so proud. My life has been made. So let's get into the conversations with Jamie.
And I do not think I ever opened a book in my life which had not something to say upon woman's inconstancy. Songs and proverbs all talk of woman's fickleness. But perhaps you will say these were all written by men.
Perhaps I shall. Yes, yes, if you please, no reference to examples in books. Men have had every advantage of us in telling their own story. Education has been theirs in so much higher a degree. The pen has been in their hands. I will not allow books to prove anything.
So, Jamie, I am excited to talk to you about Persuasion.
Are you really? I feel like you might not be because you're not a Jane Austen fan. Am I calling you out too early in the episode? It feels like I might be.
No, I think it's perfect. But that's it. Well, exactly part of why I'm excited to talk to you about it. So this week, because you picked that as the book that has had the greatest influence on you, I have read more Jane Austen than I ever have in my entire life.
I'm changing lives. This is what I'm doing.
That you were certainly attempting to. So let's just start with the very basics. When did you first read it? Because you told me that 17-year-old Jamie was all about that.
She was. I read it my senior year in high school because I was supposed to be reading Ellison's Invisible Man.
Okay.
And I stopped reading it and decided I got into college. I don't have to make an A in this class anymore. I failed. I failed that class the last second semester. And I read, the librarian said, well, I think you'd like this, honey. And so this is why I read Jane Austen's Persuasion.
That sounds so much like something I would have done. And I think part of why I've not ever successfully read Jane Austen is because of high school. I've always been quick to read what I want to read instead of what I'm told to read, which is why I'm a terrible book club member.
Because you're always the person who's like, this book was great, but let me tell you about the book I really read.
Well, or I'm the person who said, I'll read that later, but right now I'm really into this thing over here.
Okay.
I don't know that I've ever read any of the sort of great British authors.
I think this is what happened. When I was 17, I was very influenced by all pop culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, my life is different because of Blossom, or my life is different because of Saved by the Bell. And so with Persuasion, I'm sure Jane Austen likes being put in the category.
Oh, yes, totally.
With Zack and Slater. But that is when I fell in love with all things British, like British TV, British movies, British actors, all things. And I think the reason this book was so influential is because, I mean, this book was published after she died. Mm-hmm. And so I loved the intrigue of how this all came about, this book. And it's not her best written book for mm-hmm. sure, because she didn't get a chance to edit it and really spend some time on the second draft or third draft because she's dead. But what I love about it is it's her oldest heroine. And my 17-year-old self didn't even know that I would need an old heroine who was not, because she was very much assessed by her age, by her marital status, by all these things that I later in life would absolutely be assessed by.
Right.
And have to find my value in things other than those things. And being in the South, I mean, you're still very much like, oh, are you dating somebody? And, you know, if you're not, it's like, oh, it's okay. You're valuable. And it's like, well, no, I know I am. Wait, what? What's happening?
Why right. did you feel the need to say that to me?
Right.
And, of course, I love that, you know, in Persuasion, we're talking about a woman who's in her late
20s. I know, which is... God forbid.
Younger than some of us in this
room. No, for sure. Much younger than me now. But at the time, you know, you think about this was the 1800s, early 1800s. And it was, she was really a spinster who everybody kind of just looked at and said, oh, well, she's, and they really didn't, they didn't see her as she was, as right. an independent, smart, really she was attractive. She just, but because she wasn't married.
Bless her heart.
Bless her heart. Yeah, the value isn't there. And so for me reading it, I went, okay, my end all be all doesn't have to be being married or even, like I wanted to, I mean, I wanted to marry Zach or Slater. So it obviously. Was, it connected, but it didn't have to define who I was. And so I needed that kind of foundation, unbeknownst to me, much later in life. And so that I think that's why that book is so influential, because I go back to it so often.
Right.
And go, okay, you can be independent and then still find love, but still find you were enough without it. But yes. it's great to find it, too, because she does eventually find love in the book.
Yes. Well, and part of what I do really enjoy about it, even though it's not been my easiest read
sure.
ever,
sure.
is some of the ways that she, you know, people are telling her what to do. And mm. as a younger woman, she... acquiesces. Yeah. She says, okay, yes, you get to define my life choices. And then we see her now in the present tense with a little more wherewithal, a little more, wait, you don't define me. Mm-hmm. Wait, men don't get to tell my story. I get to tell my story.
Yeah.
And it's actually pretty sassy.
It's very sassy, which I think that's why it was her last novel that she wrote. I think that's why she was getting older and unmarried, Jane Austen was. And I think for her, she was in her 40s. I mean, God forbid. And what I love is that she was saying, and she literally said that, like, you don't get to decide for me, I decide for me. So yes. I love that.
Yeah, and that's really empowering and not a message that we get a lot as young women. You know, some of my friends... get a little like, okay, take off your feminist hat for a minute here when I talk about things like Disney movies. But right. And we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, we will.
In a very different way. But, you know, so many of those Disney princesses.
Yeah.
My gosh, I just went to Disney World in March with my family. And I was like, please stop putting the Little Mermaid in front of my face.
Don't
talk
me...
about yeah. the antithesis.
I know, Ariel, the hoarder. Who is not happy being a princess of the entire ocean. Well, I'll give up my voice to be on this. Don't get me started.
I mean, it's intense because we have so many of these lessons that are, you know, you were defined by this. You go pick up this man. You do whatever he tells you to do, or you do what daddy tells you to mm-hmm. do. I mean, Ariel does rebel against her daddy.
Yeah.
She gives up her daddy.
Yeah.
So that she can, gives up her daddy and her fins so that she can go hang out with this man who she's not really had a conversation with.
He's just hot. He's just hot and wet in a storm.
Yeah.
Right? And which I get the appeal of that for sure. But I don't know that you give up everything for that.
Okay, so now today, you've said that your life doesn't look like what your family expected.
Right.
You know, you're not a math professor.
Yes.
In a big house with four kids.
No, not to my knowledge. I haven't seen the kids in the house anyway.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, that would be tricky, right?
Right, right.
So how do you translate this book that was transformational at age 17?
Yes.
How does that affect you today?
Oh, it still does. That's what I love about it, is that it's still so true at this point in my life. Anne Elliot, you know, she really decides these voices are overwhelming her. And I feel like that sometimes, that the voices of friends and family and coworkers and colleagues and culture all are telling me to be this certain thing or certain way. And for Anne, she was able to get to the point that go, I'm going to let these voices, I'm going to hear them, but I'm not going to let them define the choices I make. I'm going to use them just as, you know, this canvas to paint my own picture. And so for me, that's what I hope I'm doing in my life, is letting the bring colors to the palette, but me decide what the picture looks like.
You get to be you.
I get to be, right, you do you.
Yeah, you do you, and I'll do me.
Right, exactly.
All right. Well, thank you, Jamie. You, girl. We'll have to continue our conversation.
I'm gonna get you in my Jane Austen book club.
Yes, we'll work on it. Right. There is a book called The Jane Austen Book Club.
I've read it too, and
isn't that Karen Joy Fowler?
Yes,
I love her. Okay. That's another podcast. We can keep going another time.
Yes.
So thank you so much.
Thanks.
Well, speaking of spinsters who get upset about men telling their story, let's talk about P.L. Travers, Walt Disney, and your favorite film, and one of my favorite films, Mary Poppins.
Yes.
Now, y'all buckle up, because we might be here for a little while.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
So you have a pop culture podcast. You talk about movies all the time.
Yes.
I've seen online you like everything from Zero Dark Thirty to Mad Max. So why is one of your favorite movies this family film from the 1960s?
Well, I do have a varied taste. I do like national tragedies and sad documentaries. That's also a fuel in my life. But I always chase that with something happy. So Mary Poppins is the perfect, like if you're going to watch Zero Dark Thirty, chasing it with Mary Poppins is very wise.
Practically perfect.
Practically perfect in every way. I think I love it. I watched it when I was 11 years old.
Okay.
And from that point, my only understanding of Disney had been Sleeping Beauty, Snow White, Cinderella. And so doing this different, which was live action, mixed with animation, but then this woman, she was a revelation.
She was a revelation to me, too. That was like my first crush as a child.
Was it? Mary Poppins. Oh, my God. And I had a crush on Bert, so this makes perfect sense. But what I loved about her is she was a female character who, and at 11 years old, you're in that transition, that tween transition of how do I stay loud and boisterous and powerful in the things that I'm good at and smart at, and then, but also how do I become a teenager who is feminine and meek and the expectations of those years. And so Mary Poppins was that balance. Like she was feminine and she powdered her nose in the midst of chaos, but then also was very bold and brash. And so as an 11-year-old, I was already, even if I didn't really consciously know it, I was trying to figure out that balance. Princess Leia was a hero. Yep. And so I was thinking, how do I care about my hair?
Yep.
But also care about my independence.
Well, and it's weird because, I mean, children universally love the film, but the kids in the movie are like the least well-defined characters of any Disney movie ever.
They're
boring.
Really awful.
Nobody likes them. And it's all about Mary and Bert. But so watching it as an adult now,
yes,
do you find yourself looking at it differently? Like I think now I tend to, as somebody who is in the workforce, I tend to look at Mr. Banks as a more sympathetic character than maybe I did as a kid.
For sure. And I think even in the movie, I think that's what Mary is teaching the family. Like, look at your father differently. Let's go to his workplace and see how they're trying to destroy his spirit and his hope and his joy, which is often what our own workplaces do to us. Not y'all, of course. But the workplace tries to show you that money matters. It's the only thing that matters.
Right.
Making a profit. And profit's important. I'm a capitalist. But at the same time, going, this may influence why he's this way at home.
Yeah.
And I had a father like that, too. So it really resonated, like, oh, that's why Dad's grumpy when he comes home from second shift.
Right. It's a very good film for, like, kids who are struggling to understand their parents.
For sure.
And in that way, I guess the kids are sort of relatable and well-defined.
But they're just vehicles.
They're just vehicles for adventures with Mary. And
yes.
I think, so I assume you've heard that they're making a Mary Poppins 2. How
do
you feel
kidding?
About this?
Oh, well, Emily Blunt is on my Hall of Fame of actresses. So the fact that she is in the sequel is exciting. And then, I mean, gosh, Lin-Manuel Miranda, how can you go wrong?
Right, I mean, but it's not like they're going to take Hamilton and then suddenly put it on the streets of 1920s New York. Although I would like a suffragette hip-hop musical.
Oh.
I think that would be pretty awesome.
Well, and his influence, hopefully, he's not just a, you know, an actor. He's a creator and a producer. And but what I do love is that those books are part of my bookshelf. P.L. Travers, she created a universe that was delightful, that Walt Disney bastardized a little, but in a way that I loved.
Yeah, I think I think he improved it because I've read the books. Not necessarily. I think that the film. It's kind of like I think West Side Story. The film is the best version of West Side Story
for sure.
I think Mary Poppins. The film is the best version of Mary Poppins.
Yes, because in the book she's a lot harsher and a little crazier and a little brutal to the children in a way that she gives a little gentleness in the film. But I like the idea that we're going to get to see in the future. Yeah. So the sequel will get to see us 20 years further down the books.
Now, did you see Saving Mr. Banks?
I did.
What do you think about that?
I really loved it because, again, what we learn about George Banks in the film and in the books even, you know, that he is this, there's a story behind the story. Mm-hmm. And there's a story that explains this character. And I believe that always. When people cut me off on the interstate, I'm like, they have a story.
Right.
They're this way because something happened to them, right?
Yeah.
But that sounds very psychotherapeutic.
There's a David Foster Wallace monologue about that.
Oh, okay,
about,
good. About, well, great. People. I'm glad that I'm aligning with him.
You're in good company.
Yeah. Okay, good. But that's
maybe not the best company.
But. Well, morally, maybe not, right, but sure. In other ways. But what I love about the Saving Mr. Banks is you get an explanation of why was P.L. Travers so harsh about this fight she was in with Walt Disney about right. this character and why she really denied him any access to future novels. And
then it was neat seeing them both kind of relate over having the sort of distant, flawed father and both wanting to see them
yes.
redeemed. Now, whether or not that's how it actually happened or it's the Disney retelling of the Disney retelling of Mary Poppins.
I like any Disney version of any story that makes me cry.
Right.
I'm on board.
Do you have a favorite song from the film?
You know, it really is Chim Chim Cheree, which is unexpected. But I love it because it sets the set. I mean, you get the setting. Mm-hmm. It starts the film. It's Bert, which I had a little crush on. Maybe still I have a crush on Dick Van Dyke. But I like that it's ominous, which I think now as an adult, I see the real creepiness.
There's a lot of darkness. I mean, it's yeah. like every Disney film. It's dripping with family lessons and morality, but it's a darker movie.
It is.
I mean, you've got the like the old hag with the dog that they run into when they're escaping the bank, and then you have the B plots of like the ongoing suffragette movement and then the collapse of the banks, all just going on in the background.
It's great how much really political chatter is going on in the film, and for an 11-year-old, I didn't even understand. But I think about when the film came out; it was the same year that. They passed Title VII, where you can discriminate against women anymore in the workplace. Mm-hmm. So I like that it was a little message to America, like, good job, you're on track. We've solved issues, right? But I like that, I mean, the woman at the bank on the steps, I actually have a snow globe that plays Tuppence, and she's on, and then you shake it, and the birds, and
That's really awesome.
It's actually a weird thing to have in my house. But
I have the parrot head umbrella, so I'm
perfect.
Equally weird.
So. Kindred spirits.
Let's see. The Sherman Brothers, obviously an important part of Disney history, and I thought Jason Schwartzman played one of them perfectly.
Perfectly.
In Saving Mr. Banks.
And BJ Novak. I love them. I love all the characters.
They were
in
all
that.
Great. Tom Hanks didn't necessarily get the voice or the look of Walt Disney, but he kind of has that Walt Disney presence.
I
like
mean,
he feels like he should be Walt Disney.
Well, in theory, we're supposed to love Walt Disney, right? We're supposed to, and we forget, like, oh, he was an anti-Semite. Like, he was probably really a bit of an a-hole. But everybody, and which may or may not be true of Tom Hanks. I don't know. That's a mystery.
And I don't, we could have a huge tangent on
right.
this for a whole podcast. We'll do that later. I don't think it's necessarily true of Walt Disney either, but I'll hold that.
Right, right, right.
For a future time. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Patty Griffin.
Yes.
The Living with Ghosts solo debut.
Yes.
Now, I will admit, totally admit right
okay.
here, that
okay.
I was not a Patty fan. And I went into this listening to it yesterday because I want to be prepared to talk to you.
Right, right.
That album hooked me.
What? I'm so excited.
And I am not, this is not podcast hyperbole.
Okay, good.
But if it came out in 2016, it would probably be my favorite album this year.
Stop.
Why can an album from 20 years ago hook a novice so quickly
well,
on the first listen?
That's amazing. And I know your taste in music and how aggressively critical you are. Yes. So that is an honor that I could bring something to your ears that you would love. I think the reason that album, it's funny, you know, it was her demo. Originally when she divorced her husband, went into music.
Right.
So life changed, sent her into the music industry. And she was picked up by A&M. And they said, hey, we're going to create an album. We're going to produce it, put it in the studio. And then they scratched that whole project because they said, we just don't feel like you're part of it. And she's later said, you just didn't hear me in that album. And
right,
so
right.
They decided to just go, well, you know what? We're going to release your demo that you recorded in your kitchen. So this album is just her in her kitchen with a guitar. And I think that's why it's so valuable, because you take something that is just stripped down to, we're not trying to be a 90s album or a Knott's album or whatever. We're just trying to get at songwriting and that voice.
That voice. It is so intimate. I had no idea about the story about the kitchen, but that explains why it's so intimate.
Right, right.
So tell me, favorite song.
Oh my gosh. I mean, that's like picking a favorite child. I don't even have children. But I mean, I say that's hard. I think all parents have a favorite child. They just don't want to admit it. But for me, it's probably Every Little Bit, because I listened to this album at 21. And for me, 21-year-old Jamie has only listened to Christian music.
Right.
And secretly Cyndi Lauper. Right. And so I'm suddenly being introduced by my college roommate to this woman who is a singer-songwriter. And now I have, why it's so influential is it's developed a love for singer-songwriters for a lifetime.
Right.
And then, of course, I go down the rabbit hole with Sarah McLachlan and Sean Colvin and Tori Amos at that time. But my favorite song, because Every Little Bit, is because at the time I was feeling things so intensely and harboring like dating relationships and papers I've written and grades I've gotten, and because that's all you can think about in college. And there's a line in that song where she says, by this I'm able in all of my travels to make these memories quit. And that was where I was having to figure out, how do I move on from things?
Right.
And so that's why I can still listen to that song now, even when I'm, because music for me, I want to feel music viscerally. So I have playlists for like, your heart is hurt, play this Spotify playlist. Or you are under a deadline, so you're feeling anxiety, listen to this Spotify playlist. This song could be on every playlist. Like, you just have to focus. Don't let this become who you are. Let this not define you. That's why I love that song
And
so
I
much.
Think that's why the album works so well for me when you talk about the visceral feel of it, mm-hmm. because it is so stripped down and it is acoustic and it just works so well.
Yes.
My favorite song was Moses. Every Little Bit was the one song that I was sort of kind of familiar with a bit.
Right.
But the one that really grabbed me was Poor Man's House.
Oh, yes.
Oh, listen to this. Your dad's poor today and will be poor forever. Like, you can hear the sorrow in her lyrics.
Right.
When you listen to artists today, is there anyone in the landscape today who can convey that type of message so succinctly and just hit you like a ton of bricks?
Well, there are several artists that I love like that. So the May They Rest in Peace, the Civil Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so angry at them still. Like, I feel mad at them for not sticking it out and getting it together.
I mean, it's part of the game.
I know, it's part of the game. Penny and Sparrow I love them. Johnny Swim, just artists that, I love duos. Artists that sing songs where you just go, Ray LaMontagne, who is he's the author of Sadness.
Right.
Fetal position on the floor. Like, me listening, like, he feels all the things I feel. But I will say, can I talk about Lemonade, Beyonce's Lemonade?
You can talk all day about it, because
okay,
I sure can.
Okay, good. Because that album, both visual and just the audio, she feels things so, and she's going through the stages of grief in these songs. And I like, when I need to feel angry, I'm just gonna be like, I'm angry and I want to key your car, hold up, you know? Or I'm feeling really sad, sandcastles, like, this didn't work out like I planned, or I'm gonna give forgiveness, so here's where I'm, you know? And there's joy in it. That first song, I mean, and that album, just where Pray You Catch Me, like, I'm just like, okay, me too. Pray You Catch Me too.
And yes, so, my wife says that song brings her to tears, like, every time out she of the listens gate. To it. And that's the first song.
Yeah.
And that's why I kind of making the comparison between the two is it's a chance for an artist who is really skilled to tell a story song for song through their lyrics. And right. it's kind of becoming a lost art, at least to me. Do you feel that way?
Oh, I feel that for sure. Because I feel like we've lost, because we have Max Martin, who is telling us from Sweden what we should listen to right. and how much we should love and that we should only dance and be happy. And I like that. I can experience those songs and love them. But what I love is, I mean, I love storytelling in all genres, whether it's, I mean, obviously books, but, obviously. You know, TV and movies and music. I like experiencing something and seeing myself in it, and it's mm-hmm. hard to see myself in a One Direction song, no offense to the boys, but I can see myself in, even in Beyonce, like I can see myself in this music with Patty Griffin, obviously, because we're all, and it's universal, we're feeling it. So I don't understand why it's not more popular, maybe because it's just such a devastating time in our lives politically, or so we're like, I just want Justin Timberlake to dance with trolls. That's all I want. And so I get that. I get that that's where we want to be, and maybe we don't want to feel things.
And there's also, there's always room for that. It's room for Justin yeah. Timberlake and the troll song and the dancing around and right. the Pharrell and the happy and things like that. But I think there's also room to tell the type of stories that Patty Griffin is telling, especially in Poor Man's House. You can't be a Southerner
right.
and not resonate with a couple of those lyrics. They just have to hit home. It was so... I was sitting in my chair with my head hung low, listening to her tell this story.
I know.
And the thing that that really helped, again, was that acoustic backing, because it's just the lyrics
yeah.
and that guitar, and that's it.
Right.
Talk a little bit about how that sound through the album kind of helped convey her message a little stronger. Because for me, just having her voice and those guitar licks really just pushed that message to the forefront.
Well, you don't get wrapped up in anything else. You're not getting wrapped up in instrumentation. You're not getting wrapped. Not that that wouldn't be a value, because sometimes you can listen to her, the album, and the critique I've always heard is that, well, every song starts the same. It's right. just her and a guitar. And but for me, it's like the first page of a chapter. Like, yeah, we have a chapter heading and now we have an opening sentence. Like, it's going to feel the same, but what you read in every song is so different. And this is a woman who came from Maine, who was middle class. Like, she's, you just go, why do I, from Alabama, with this father and this mother, and how do I connect to her so greatly? But I think it is because all the focus comes in on those lyrics and those words and that story she's weaving and just these short verses and chorus.
I gotta agree. Now, yeah. that album was released in 1996. It's 2016. I am old. I can't believe it's been 20 years. Why is that album still relevant today when it was released for me and I was in the 11th grade? My boy Hammond Tree was probably -4 or something. But
that's true.
I think it's because it's, again, which I think hopefully all my choices have been, it's about universal truths. So for whether you're a man, I'm a woman, we're different ages, we live different lives, you're married, I'm not, even though there's all these differences between us, what's beautiful is what she's telling are universal stories. I mean, about heartbreak, about loss, about feeling less than, about being overwhelmed by your family, about letting go, whether it's of a person or a season in your life. Like, those are all true for us, no matter our age. I mean, I think that my niece at 12 could listen to this and in the midst of it go, I love Wendy, but I also love Patty Griffin.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what works for me. I am going to go right now and listen to Moses. Thank you so okay, much, good. Jamie.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for joining us, Jamie, and for introducing me to my new favorite album, apparently Living with Ghosts. Who knew? Who knew?
I knew.
Well, thanks. Now I know. So we're all on the same page.
Thanks for joining us for Triple Take, the AL.com podcast in which we talk to people about books, music, and movies, and any geekery that comes up in between. I'm Carla Jean Whitley, and you can follow me on whatever social media you can find me on at Inkstained Life.
I'm John Hammondtree, and you can find me at John Hammondtree on Twitter and at BirminghamHammondtree on Instagram.
And I'm Edward Bowser. You can follow me on Twitter at ETBOWSER.
And be sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and follow AL.com on Twitter.
And hey, if you like the podcast, consider leaving us a little rating. If you don't like it, maybe email us instead. We'll talk to y'all soon.